Hey there, everybody. It is November the 21st, 2010. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay with Ken and Becca. You're listening to us on WVEWLP 107.7 FM, Brattleboro Community Radio. We're also broadcasting with pride worldwide on QNation.fm. And as always, we join you alongside all of the other fine podcasts at clickclickexposed.com. A slight technical snafu at the start of this week's show lost our first minute to the gods of time, but we join you about a minute 20 into the show as we start discussing the news that the Mississippi school that chose to cancel prom rather than let Constance McMillan attend with her girlfriend will change its discrimination policy and pay the teen $35,000 in damages. Enjoy. The Itawamba School District has agreed to update its anti-discrimination policy to include sexual orientation, a first for a school district in Mississippi. The district will also pay her court fees and $35,000 in damages. And, quote, from Constance McMillan, quote, "I'm so glad this is all over. I won't ever get my prom back, but it's worth it if it changes things at my school. I hope this means that in the future at my school, future students at my school will be treated fairly. I know there are students and teachers who want to start a gay-straight alliance club, and they should be able to do that without being treated like I was by the school." Pretty freaking cool.
Very, very cool.
This show I dedicate towards creating change.
Yay, change.
Mia Mingus, who's going to be on the show a little bit later, is going to talk to us a lot about how to create change in this world. So, well done, Constance McMillan. What else? Let's talk about more about it. I'm looking for happy creating change stories. I seem to have cut and pasted
I've stumbled upon the depressing stories. So, yes. Bring on the happy.
Okay.
Come on, Ken. You're in charge of optimism.
People were arrested. And Uganda's not
lost
doing
his job
well. We'll come back to that. Pakistan. Did you read about Pakistan?
Just go to the happy.
Okay.
We're skipping to the happy.
Hey, the UN Economic and Social Council has voted to accredit the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission after strong lobbying by the U.S. administration. The 54-member council approved the U.S.-based group's application for consultative status by a vote of 23 to 13 with 13 abstentions. The organization, which has offices in South Africa, Argentina, and the Philippines, has been trying since 2007 to get consultative status with the council so it can work at the United Nations. The council serves as the main UN forum for discussing international economic and social issues. The U.S. government and 14 members of Congress supporting the application believe the group's application was not approved at first because it promotes gay rights, but we don't really care. Because it was approved.
We don't care about gay rights.
No, we care about gay rights, but
we do care about gay rights.
We don't care about the past. We just care that they were accredited. And so, well done, International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission.
Yay.
And with that, I think I've used up all my happy stories. I'm looking through right now. I know.
Come on, Ken. Pull it together.
Thief robs this place. AIDS increases here.
But there was some good.
California?
There was good.
In
okay.
California. A survey released today in California revealed that a change in voters' attitudes towards marriage for gay and lesbian couples has taken place. Less than 2 years after Prop 8 restricted marriage to heterosexual couples, only one person in five now says that Proposition 8 was a good thing for California. And 51%...
say they know what it is?
It's like a majority. No, 51% would vote to allow same-sex couples to marry.
Ken, that's more than half.
One might argue it's like a whole percent more than half. So
what's the margin
really
of error
exciting.
On that? You know, more than 1%, I'm guessing.
I hope not. Conducted by the Public Religion Research. That's what it's called. The poll took special note of voters' religious affiliations and attitudes. And this is very interesting, Rebecca. According to their findings, religiously unaffiliated voters, Latino Catholics, white mainline Protestants, and white Catholics are most supportive of same-sex marriage, while black Protestants, white evangelicals, and most especially Latino Protestants are most opposed. The biggest shift of religious support for same-sex marriage came from Latino Catholics, where many respondents said that their opinion had changed since Prop 8 passed. Across all religious categories, ethnic minorities and young voters moved to become more supportive of marriage for same-sex Californian couples.
Well, congratulations.
Look at that. And that's our good news for this
evening. Changing minds and...
yeah,
yes.
And so we're going to dedicate this song. This is a Dolly Parton number, as requested by tonight's guest, Mia Mingus. And it's appropriate for happy news. This is Light of a Clear Blue Morning. And we have light now because we're on earlier. Enjoy.
Mm-hmm. night, and I've been waiting for the morning. It's been a long, hard fight, but I see a brand new day dawning. I've been looking for the sunshine. Gonna be alright. It's been all wrong, 'cause I can see the light of a clear blue morning. I can see the light of a brand new day. I can see the light of a clear blue morning. Oh,
that.
I feel like everything's gonna be all right.
Dolly Parton, and Mia Mingus. I'm excited to tell Mia Mingus that I'm so appreciative that that is now on my iPod. It was not previously, and now let's get to some depressing news.
No, wait, I have a little more.
Oh, good.
Okay, wait,
I don't
I'll
know
back
how to transition.
Up. Okay, do the sad news, and I'll bring us back up. A little.
Okay, we'll do minor sad news. Although it was big for them, the Pacific Pride Foundation, which hosts Santa Barbara Pride, They lost more than $6,000. Did you read about this?
No.
After a robbery at this year's festival at Chase Palm Park. A spokesperson for the nonprofit organization says a thief took money from their concessions tent during gay pride events. According to KEYT-TV, a Santa Barbara news station, a thief sliced a hole in the concessions tent to access the money. No one has been arrested in connection with the robbery. Hey, thief, you just stole from the gays. Give back more than $6,000.
Yeah, I was not happy that's about lame. That. But you know what? That is not so going to happen lame. At the GLAAD summer party in P-Town.
Which you are going to?
Which I am bartending at.
Look at that.
I feel like I need to wear my This Show Is So Gay t-shirt.
We can cut off the
and
sleeves.
And everything. It is. I can look it up right now.
Okay, so you're going to look that up. And we're actually going to have the executive director of GLAAD is going to be on an upcoming show. So that's very exciting.
Saturday, July 31st.
That's a week from Saturday.
Yes, wow. It is. I was just making sure it's Saturday and not Sunday.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
do you remember all like, your drink recipes and stuff like that?
I remember. Are you kidding me?
Really?
If there are pretty girls around, I might forget. But okay. Hey, we'll try. I think it's going to be mostly beer and wine anyway. But
Hattie, let me come quiz on you. Down. Can I
come,
quiz you?
No.
How
come
do you
on.
Make
a gin and tonic?
A Jack
gin
and Coke.
And tonic.
Jack and Coke.
You take a little Jack Russell.
Uh huh.
And you put the martini on his back. And then you like say, do you want to go for a walk? And then he shakes it for you.
That was cute. Yeah. Do you want to do... Was that
is the Dolly Parton, man.
I know. She got us in a really good mood.
No, but Argentina?
Argentina.
Argentina says, yay, gay marriage.
They did.
Yay for the queers
they
in Argentina.
Did.
I have to remember what the word is for that, but it's not...
I learned at tonight's WVEW, meaning how we can broadcast remotely. So we got a... trip on down to Argentina and broadcast from there.
Yes, we can go with my father's wife.
Is that right?
She's from Argentina.
Look at that. All right. Well,
she'll give us the tour. Buenos Aires.
Good news in HIV AIDS research. For the first time, a vaginal gel has proved capable of blocking the AIDS virus. It cuts in half a woman's chances of getting HIV from an infected partner in a study in South Africa. Scientists called it a breakthrough in the long quest for a tool to help women whose partners won't use condoms. The results need to be confirmed in another study, and that level of protection is probably not enough to win approval of the gel in countries like the U.S., researchers say. But they are optimistic that it can be improved. So that's good news.
Every little bit helps.
We're always looking for good news. We talked last week a little bit about how the Lawrence King murder trial is going to get started, and that's not looking so good for getting started. Now, the defense in that, the lawyers representing the boy who's on trial for murdering Lawrence King, they want the trial judge to step down from the proceedings. According to the Ventura County Star, Country Star, I assume that's a newspaper, the attorneys for Brandon McKierney claim that Ventura Superior Court Judge Charles Campbell cannot be impartial in the case. The claim comes shortly after Judge Campbell declined McKierney's lawyer's request for more time to further prepare for the trial. So it seems to be yet another tactic.
The whole story is
to delay
so sad.
I want that trial to get started because I want someone, there's got to be, for someone, this trial has got to provide some closure.
You know, I don't know. I really don't. I'm really more of a proponent of restorative justice at this point. I mean, especially with young offenders, I feel like we're going to lock a kid away who might not have been mature enough to...
You're one of those people who has, like, you have one of those free Lindsay Lohan t-shirts now, don't you?
No. But, I mean, this kid did something really horrible.
Oh, he did something terrible.
But are we going to throw away a whole human being... Person.
We got to get the trial
going
first.
Something he did
when
he was very young. I mean, I don't want to say I support him in any way. But
what do you all think out there? Send us an email at thisshowisogay@aol.com because we will continue to talk about the Lawrence King murder trial on this show because, as you know, it's one that's very near and dear to our hearts because this is a big story. It's a big story, and we're always advocating for youth. So
yes.
Let us know what you think. thisshowisogay@aol.com. Lieutenant Dan Choi seems he's been arrested again. Lieutenant Dan Choi, Get Equal co-founder Robin McGee, and six others have been arrested after stopping traffic on Las Vegas Boulevard to bring attention to congressional inaction to advance the Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
And he was officially let go, I believe, wasn't he?
In the last one?
No, now. Didn't they finally make a ruling on?
Well, this was the last time he was arrested. When he was arrested outside the White House, they dismissed that case. No, he's now been arrested again. This was yesterday. He was arrested again. The eight protesters stopped traffic on the strip for at least 10 minutes before police officers on bicycles. I love that that's part of the story. Just for the image, police officers on bicycles arrived at the scene of the protest.
Yes. I thought he was on forced leave, though, from work. And now they've actually cut him.
Oh, his job?
Yes.
As in he was fired? I do not know. I do not know that. I do not know. The protesters were carrying a sign that spanned half the length of the street, reading, no one can do more, getequal.org. Several other protesters formed a picket line and carried signs reading, I can still be fired for who I am. Get Equal asked its followers last week who should be taken to task for not moving the bill known as End of Forward. And so Senator Harry Reid, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Representative Barney Frank, and Representative George Miller.
Barney.
Those are the four Barney. Congress members who are in question that they're not moving it forward enough. So now this group has been arrested.
Yes.
Some action-filled protests.
Indeed.
These are some action-filled. We got to get out there.
Speaking of the LGBT queer folk on the march in Poland.
What's
they
going
are
on
marching.
Poland?
They are marching for rights.
When is
in
that
Poland
happening?
This month.
All right.
Like really soon.
Let's get some rights in Poland.
Rock on.
My ancestors are from Poland.
Doesn't surprise me.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Okay. let's see. And then
I got nothing.
Just a quick update there.
You're the marching type.
things are not good in Uganda.
Oh.
Just want to put that out there. So still
Kenya
being
have
considered.
You to get back there and fix it.
I know. I really want to. The proposed law is still in effect. They, without major government intervention, the initiative, this law that I'm about to describe, is expected to be signed into law by the end of 2010. The proposed law sentences gays and lesbians to life in prison. The death penalty awaits those who have intentionally, and here's a key, or unintentionally spread HIV. So if the government determines that you've unintentionally spread HIV, you can face the death penalty. Repeat offenders who engage in homosexual relations and anyone who engages in sexual contact with a minor of the same sex, all of those, the death penalty can await them. If enacted, the bill will also extend the death penalty to those already convicted. So it's nice and grandfatherly retroactive. Not so good. Yeah, I know.
Mm.
I know, because it was so not a part of my experience in Uganda that it was only, what, 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago that I was there, and that was just so not part of that experience. So it's hard for me to reconcile. All right, here is a song. Well, this is a good one. We dedicate this one to Lieutenant Dan Choi and all the other folks who were arrested. Enjoy.
Let them say we're crazy. What do they mean?
I choose to believe that I didn't get some imitation version of that, but that it's been updated and re-recorded.
You definitely have brought shame upon your family.
I'm a little worried. My family of 80s people. All right, yes. we gotta welcome a guest and move on from that. Guest, are you there?
I'm here.
Thank gosh.
Hello.
We love that. Mia Mingus, everybody, is a queer, physically disabled woman of color, Korean-American, transracial, and transnational adoptee living in Atlanta, Georgia, raised middle class in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and born in Korea. Pause for me to take a breath. Okay. If you have not, folks, read her words or seen her speak, as she does so passionately on disability justice, race, reproductive justice, gender, queer liberation, transformative justice, transracial and transnational adoption, multiple oppressed identities, and multi-issue politics. If you've not read her material, if you've not read her words, seen
Start
her speak on this,
now.
You are truly missing the opportunity to be changed. Mia was a 2005 New Voices Fellow, was named one of the Advocates 40 Under 40 in 2010. We love that list. One of the 30 most influential Asian Americans under 30 in 2009 by Angry Asian Man. And she was honored with the 2008 Creating Change Award by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. You know that little group. She has raked in myriad other accolades and is crowning it all off by calling into our show tonight. Mia Mingus, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, I feel so gay. It's great.
Yeah, were you not feeling gay before you called in?
Oh, no, I'm always feeling gay.
Awesome. What's going on down in Atlanta?
Well, right now I am in the coolness of my house, and it is very, very hot outside. So it's nice and peaceful inside in my house.
Lovely.
Be ready for y'all's show.
Lovely. Now, you, Mia, are what we like to call a listener-requested guest. Our listeners wrote in to us at thisshowissogay@AOL.com and said, well, if you've had these people on, you have to have Mia Mingus on.
How could you not have had Mia on?
That's what we got. And so we reached out, and here you are, and we're thrilled that you were able to call in tonight.
Oh, thank you all.
All right, so much to talk about. Are you ready?
I'm definitely, yes.
Okay. Tell everyone, Mia, because I have been doing all of my Mia Mingus homework, and it's a whole pantheon of homework that I've done now. Tell everyone what a community cultivator is.
Oh, that's so funny that you asked that. This has just been coming up everywhere. Well, community cultivator has come out of my, my connection with and work with TK, who's part of doing the Mythos Project, and it's part of the Truth-Telling Project, I think it's called. And she has been going around the country and documenting and recording stories of radical mamas, and she has expanded that work around, like, just, you know, what we would traditionally think of as, like, mothers who have children, to think about how folks who are literally doing the work of raising community and holding community and building community, that is oftentimes the work that's unseen, it's oftentimes work that's unpaid, and a lot of it happens to also fall to, I would say, folks that are female, that are women identified, that are feminine, you know, in terms of across gender, across sexes, but like in terms of those categories.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we think about community cultivator, I think of it as folks who are doing the caretaking of communities. They're literally the ones who are gathering people for meals and potlucks. They're the ones who are, you know, calling people to make sure they're okay if they're sick, sending over food, asking people if they need help with childcare, doing the small minutia work that helps to keep people and communities connected.
Love that. Mm. Love that. I mean, such a better word than, I mean, it's a different concept, obviously, than community organizer or community hog tire or whatever
sure.
other words we're going to
come up
really with.
I actually really like this language better than what I've heard it phrased as before, which is auntie work. There are the mommies and there are the aunties. Aunties swoop in and do all
Lovely.
Of that other stuff.
We love that. But, and then another phrase, Mia, that I have heard you use often, which I would love for you to deconstruct a little bit. What's a nonprofit industrial complex?
let me see if I can do my best to deconstruct it. So the nonprofit industrial complex has come out of, I think the biggest kind of place it started to get more visibility is from the book, The Revolution Will Not Be Funded. It's an
right.
anthology that was put out by Insight, Women of Color Against Violence. And whenever, you know, I know people have been seeing this a lot, industrial complex gets put after a lot of different words, like prison industrial complex, medical industrial complex, educational industrial complex, and now the nonprofit industrial complex. And really what we're saying is that it's about profit. It's not actually necessarily about helping people or the well-being of communities or, you know, helping folks to actually be self-sufficient. It's actually about feeding and sustaining itself. And so we think about, we say the nonprofit industrial complex, that it's like almost like a system onto itself that depends on feeding itself. And it depends on communities actually being in a disadvantaged state. And then its connection to foundation funding, which are oftentimes connected to corporations, big multinational corporations, the stock market, you know, large systems that are within capitalism that are funding the foundations that fund the nonprofit industrial complex, which rely on communities to be, you know, in need or to be devastated or to be, you know, needing community organizers that work for the nonprofit. And then the other piece of that is that because they have a state, they're under state regulations, you have to apply for a 501c3 status to get the tax exemption for people to donate to you or for foundations to give you money. But it's actually, people have, you know, very insightfully noted that it's actually a part of the state. And so when nonprofits, a lot of our social justice movements, when their job is actually sometimes to fight against the state or to push back against the state,
right.
How can they do that when they're actually regulated and approved by the state?
Well, now this freaks me out a little bit because it freaks me out a lot, Mia, because I feel like you have folks out there, and myself included and Beck included, when we're looking, okay, so maybe I have 20 extra bucks, or I have a weekend that a couple hours during a weekend that I can go work with a nonprofit. Now I'm nervous that I'm going to volunteer with a nonprofit industrial complex.
Well, it's kind of like capitalism, though. You know, we're as we all try to push against it and dismantle it and fight back, we are all, you know, entangled in it at the same time. So I think a lot of the industrial complexes, like for me, and especially those of us working in lots of different movements, but particularly the disability justice movement,
right.
working, you know, against the medical industrial complex, for example, which we say is not actually about health or well-being for people's bodies, you know, and spirits and minds or anything. It's about profiting off of people's bodies. I mean, it's hard because we're also entangled in it at the same time that we're trying to push back. So I think that there's a lot of nonprofits that are actually doing good work, and because the nonprofit industrial complex exists, it set up these conditions which make it very hard to do work outside of that industrial complex. And so it's hard for, I know, even though there is thriving work that's going on outside, it is hard because, you know, you can only get funding a lot of times from many foundations if you have a 501c3
right.
status.
Right.
So it's like, it's like, I think that there are good people doing work, but I also think about it as like a system. You know, it's like the system itself is flawed and so oftentimes sets up these really hard conditions that are just systematic, similarly to, you know, racism or classism or what have you. It doesn't mean that there's not, you know, good folks trying to push back against that system, but the system itself is flawed.
But is there some way that we can develop, and I'll give you a couple days to develop it, some sort of Mia Mingus logo that we can put on some of these websites that certify that it is not a nonprofit industrial complex? Just clip art. Just, if you could come up with something, and then we'll pitch it to the different nonprofits.
A little smiley face?
Anything. We'll take anything.
Yeah, I'll think on that. That's okay. An excellent suggestion.
You're like, I gotta go. Anyway, okay, so can I read? This is, I could have dinner with you, by the way. I've been reading your website for weeks. I've been reading your blog, and it was hard for me to pick out some quotes of things that I wanted to read, but this is what I picked. You ready?
Yes.
Quote, "The majority of the disabled women of color, especially queer women of color I meet, are descriptively disabled, not politically disabled, as was I for a long time. Or they are descriptively queer, not politically queer. Though it is hard, it makes sense to me because the risks of being a political queer disabled woman of color are great." Why are these risks so great, Mia? And how do we dismantle them?
Small question.
Oh, Ken, how much time do you all have?
We'll have you on all night,
okay.
Mia.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of risks. I think some of the things that I'm noticing are that, you know, to be, it's not the same as being out, as, you know, the way that we understand out when we use it around queer folks, right?
Right.
But that concept of being visible and actually claiming yourself as a disabled person, not just like, oh, I'm just, you know, I just have a disability, but actually being like, I'm disabled, or some people have used the term crip, whatever politicized term you feel comfortable with, but feeling connected to other disabled people, feeling like you have an analysis around ableism and that you're starting to, you know, change your behavior according to that is very difficult, especially when most access is done through relationships for a lot of disabled people who aren't able to rely on, you know, paying for PAs, personal attendants, paying for, you know, private medical care to come into their house, who are relying on just, you know, family and friends, who are relying on lovers and children, people to help them, you know, get whatever access they need. When those relationships are put at risk by saying, actually, you know, the way that you're treating me, even though you're helping me, is really ableist. And, if I can only get help if I act a certain way and I'm, like, the good disabled person, then it can be very hard to push back against that, because then people, you know, don't want to help you or don't want to help you with access, because we have this idea of accessibility as being so individualized,
right?
So it's just your problem, rather than seeing accessibility on a broad scale and looking at connecting, you know, accessibility of bathrooms with trans folks and genderqueer folks, as well as with mamas and families and parents and children and disabled folks. We see it as being very individualized, so it's on you to make sure that your accessibility is handled. But the other piece of that too is that, you know, there's this idea that you have to be deserving of help, right? So only the good disabled people, if I feel like you're deserving, am I going to sit and spend time with you or do whatever I need to do? And so it can be very scary. I mean, and the same thing happens when people come up against state systems as well, because you're forced into these, well, prove how disabled you are, or, you know, write us a sob story of how sad your life is so that you can have these benefits. Don't earn more money than X, Y, and Z. You know, be this particular way, and even trying to push against that is very scary as well, because you risk losing the very benefits that help you to survive.
Well, let me ask this in a different way, because so pretending for a second that I did not ask as base of a question as I just asked, are the questions that you're getting? I guess maybe the heart of my question is, why are there still risks? Are we making progress? Are the questions that you are getting as you're out and about and giving these great lectures and interacting with so many different folks, are the questions getting more nuanced, or are you still out there and people are saying, so what's it like with multiple identities?
It's the latter. I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
progress is always being made, but I think especially around disability work, most people have never heard of disability in any kind of a politicized way other than the mainstream. Well, and I guess mainstream is a weird word, but other than, you know, just like the more visible disability rights movement that gets heard. And right. so most people have really never, you know, the images that they've seen, the visibility that is there for disabled people are mostly all white folks. They're mostly all white disabled men. They're mostly veterans. You know, they're mostly folks of a certain class privilege who look a certain way, who look as able-bodied as possible, except, oh, you know, I'm just disabled. That's the only thing that's wrong with me. And so there's this idea, I think, of, like, thinking about multiple oppressed identities at the same time that people aren't really having to go up against.
I don't understand. So you're trying to tell our listening audience that there are people of color who are also disabled?
No, I mean, who may or may not also be queer.
I don't understand how we're even talking. I guess maybe
it is possible.
I'm feeling very, in some ways, intolerant that we're even having this conversation. Like, how are we having this conversation? How is that not a part of the dialogue?
I know. One would think, right, that would be already there. And yet it is astounding how much people don't think about it. Or they know about it, but it's not incorporated into anything, right? So our movements are working they're siloed out, as a lot of people say. They're very single issued. So it's like, we just fight for disability. But then there's a lot of people that I know, and myself included, who have tried to be part of the disability rights movement, but wanted to be like, well, actually, my race impacts how I experience ableism. It impacts how I experience being disabled, and I'd like to talk about that. And they're like, no, that we're not doing that.
Right, that's too specialized.
Only, please just pick one, Mia. Just pick one identity. Who's got the time? I'm not feeling terribly encouraged by this.
Well,
it's not your role to encourage me, Mia. I'm just putting it out there.
But there is amazing work being done.
Absolutely.
By folks who, and it's just not get. I think the problem is that it's not. It doesn't have the resources, the institutional power behind it, so it doesn't get as. It's not as visible, so we don't necessarily hear about it.
Right. All right. Well, that's what our show is for. Send them to us.
Yes, you're on the radio right now.
Send them to us. All right, let me read another one, because this is, I have to say, of everything that I read, and I read quite a bit, this was one of my favorite things. This really resonated for me. Quote from Mia Mingus, quote, "We must be willing to have hard conversations as queer people with each other about how we are different as queer people. It helps us to expand what queerness is, to see that there are many different ways to be queer. We can't be afraid to do our own work at our own tables. And yes, there is much work to be done out there with folks who aren't queer. Yes, that is important too, but we are outsiders here as well, because really, there is no out there." That's some good stuff, Mia Mingus.
She's just gonna giggle.
You can say, yeah, that's some pretty good stuff, and I wrote it.
Thank you.
Within the queer community, so are you seeing any differences in terms of, I'm nervous, I already know the answer, in terms of multiple identities within the, I think the assumption, which I hope is not the assumption, but I'm sure the assumption is, oh yes, we're talking about the straight community and they can't handle multiple identities. But I would assume even within the queer community that we struggle with that as well.
Yes. I mean, I think even just within, like, putting aside, you know, race and disability, all of these, like, quote unquote, like, other things, but even just within the L, G, the G, the B, the T, and the Q.
Right.
I mean, we even have a lot that's happening there, you know, around, I don't know that we get lumped together all the time, and I don't know necessarily that we're always having those conversations, or that the folks, especially the folks who are in power, you know, who are in large positions of power, who can leverage large amounts of resources, I don't know that they're having those conversations. But I know that there are a lot of, you know, I would say, to me, the queer liberation movement, which is different than the LGBT movement or the gay and lesbian movement, are having those conversations and are doing some pretty spectacular work around connecting,
right,
you know, connecting queer community together in different ways.
Well, we got to create this change. Okay, so this is my new segment that I worked on that I'm springing on both Becca and Mia. So this is what I'm now calling our rainbow wand of change.
I'm not quite sure how I feel about the name. We're going to work on the name.
It's the rainbow wand of change. And I feel like every time I say that, I have to do... It's our first time ever doing sound effects.
Fancy noise.
It's a noise. Mia, you are currently holding the rainbow wand of change. What is your first priority? You're going to wave that wand. What do you want to change immediately for tomorrow? What is priority number one?
Oh, my goodness. That is so difficult.
I know. But here, does this help any? I love that.
I mean, my work right now, I feel like, is building the foundation to the disability justice movement, primarily disability justice movement. And I do a lot of work, you know, because I am queer, like really thinking about queer disabled people and what it means to be queer and disabled. And so for me, a lot of my work has centered on even just building a culture of connection and connectedness with folks. And I feel like if I were to have the rainbow magic wand, did I say it correctly?
Of change,
I would want that to be the number one thing that all queer people, whether they're descriptively queer or they're politically queer, that they would feel connected with each other, whether they're disabled, whether they're immigrants, whether they're incarcerated, whether they're, you know, adopted, whether they're foreign working class, whatever it is, that they would feel connected to each other. Because I think of that is where so much of our work lies,
right,
and a lot of what we're trying to build. And I think from there, we can really do anything.
That would be a great launching off point. Now, are you in it? Now, some people, we've talked to some guests that don't want things to change immediately. They think that the true change comes through the struggle. Do you subscribe to that theory, or are there some things that you'd be okay with just snapping your fingers or waving, I won't do the noise again, the rainbow wand of change and changing immediately?
You know, that's a hard question, because I do think that there is a lot of value in the struggle and in the process of, I don't know if it's necessarily just a struggle, but in that process of working together and struggling with each other, I do think that there's a lot of work, there's a lot of things to gain from that. But if I had the rainbow wand of change,
yep,
magical rainbow wand of change, then, I mean, I guess I could also wave it and say that would already be included in what's happening. Like, we would snap our fingers and we would already have gone through all those struggles, too. So we would have the gifts that they bring as well.
Yeah. I just think it's important that we have things that we're saying, well, this is what we would change. In an ideal world, this is what it would look like. This is what we're fighting for. Not just, I want to change this line item on this bill, which is extraordinarily important and will affect tons of people's lives. But also, this is the vision we're going for. I don't know. I want a vision. I like visions. Visions are good.
Yeah.
That's good. All right, Mia, we got to talk to you a little bit about your musical selections for this evening.
Oh, my.
Yes. So this
You've
is,
had us, like, bouncing around at our
bouncing.
Seats here.
This is the part of the show, Mia, where you tell our listening audience what your song choice is say about Mia Mingus. So I'm going to cue you up with a song. We'll start out with, which I said this before on the air before you called in. I am so appreciative now that Light of a Clear Blue Morning is now on my iPod, because I kind of want to just play it every week. What does Light of a Clear Blue Morning say about Mia Mingus?
Well, Light of a Clear Blue Morning is one of my favoriteest songs ever.
Nice.
I love Dolly Parton. But have you all ever seen the movie Straight Talk?
I have seen the movie Straight Talk.
I didn't get that song from it, though.
No, I just remember the song Straight Talk for some reason.
The song plays when she decides to leave her husband and, well, it's not, I guess they're not married, but leave her, you know, crappy-ass person she's living with and get in her car and drive to her new life.
Oh.
And the one I just love that Dolly Parton is starring in the movie, and she wrote the soundtrack, because she's also, like, acting along to her own soundtrack, which is just amazing.
Love it.
I love the song, though, that there's, like, so much hope in it. And I think that for a lot of us, wherever we can find inspiration and hope, that is where we need to be.
Nice.
Your songs were so optimistic.
I know. I
mean,
love
really,
this.
I think, you know, considering we had a lot of bad news to cover this week, Ken
wasn't
and I are both
show.
Like smiling here. We're like laughing.
So what does my weird version that I think I betrayed the 80s of Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now say about Mia Mingus?
Yes, you played a weird version.
I did. I think I played some. I think it says it's by Starship.
Ken hates the 80s, basically.
No, oh my God, are you
he
wrong?
He does. He hates the 80s.
You just want me to get hate mail.
And
No.
Someone
no,
needs to crimp his hair in retaliation.
No. So some new version, I think, that Starship recorded of Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. That's what we played. What does that song say about you?
Well, that song is actually a newer song that I've just discovered, and I like to find... I like to find old songs that can be love songs to my movement.
Lovely.
So I think of that song as a love song to my movement, that we are, nothing's going to stop us, that we are in it to win it together. And, like, I love it when it's like, looking in your eyes, I see another world, and just, like, nobody believes us. Like, let them call us, you know, nuts or whatever. Like, we're just going to do it. And I love that.
Oh, my gosh. This is good stuff.
It is.
This is, I'm going to make you, I was only going to make you do those two. I'm making you do one more.
Keep
now.
Keep going.
What?
What does I Want to Dance with Somebody say about Mia Mingus?
Oh, well, that just says I love Whitney Houston. But also that, but also the, I mean, if I was to go for a metaphor again for my movement.
We love metaphors.
I feel like the disability justice movement is singing that song. Like, we really want to dance with somebody, but we're, like, trying to find somebody who loves us. Because, you know, it's like somebody who desires us in that way. And I think the work that we're doing to build cross-movement is really cutting edge right now and amazing. And, like, I see the whole movement just dive into that song.
Wow.
Oh, we want to dance with you, Mia.
I know. We're not supposed to play favorites with guests, Mia, but you honestly, in 80, 90 guests, you have some of the best energy we've ever had on these radio waves. It's fantastic.
Yes.
Yes, look at that. Where can our listening audience go to get more of this energy? Where can they go to learn more about everything you're doing?
Well, right now they can go to my blog, which is leavingevidence.wordpress.com.
And love it.
The blog is called Leaving Evidence and it's housed on WordPress. And that's kind of like my internet presence, I guess, right now. So folks are welcome to go there. And, I mean, you know, that's my email is there so people can contact me if they need to. Yeah.
Awesome. And we will link to you.
Yes, we will have that linked on our site. It was a great entry about Frida, too. I loved that.
Thank you.
Good
and we should
stuff.
We should mention that you've been doing really interesting work on your blog with adoptees as well. So if people are interested in that more tangentially,
yeah,
you might want to
tune
in.
Yes.
I would love to have you. I had to. So my partner and I, Mia, had to attend. There was a mandatory transracial adoption workshop that we had to go to, and I wanted to kill someone. It was one of the most painful experiences of people just, we started talking about white privilege and some people in the room said, oh, we're really uncomfortable. And the trainer said, okay, then let's just move on from that. And I'm like, are you kidding? So we hope that the next transracial adoption workshop will be featuring Mia Mingus. Cause it's painful.
Yeah.
So Mia, yeah, you are doing such great work. Now I called you this on the website. It's for a lot of people, it's a lot easier to come up with, oh, well, this person's a singer songwriter and this person's a senator. And for you, and there was no hesitation. I described you as a change agent because you truly are a change agent.
Thank you.
So you're going to keep doing this. You're going to keep inspiring change and you're going to bring attention to the issues that more people need to be talking about, correct?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
I will.
Well,
thanks,
Mia,
for having me on your show.
We loved having you on the show and we would love to have you back. And anything you ever want to promote, you call us up and we're going to talk more with you.
That's right.
Okay.
We
have
need
a good night, Ken and Becca.
Thank you so much,
night,
Mia. All the best.
Bye.
Bye.
been in love and lost my senses, spinning through the town. Sooner or later, the fever ends and I wind up feeling down.
Wants to dance.
Yes, she does.
Do you want to dance?
I do.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Tell us about it.
I just want to know, because usually you tell us without us even asking, Ken, how many of those songs are on your iPod? How many of them were on your iPod?
Two.
Two?
Two.
That's a good balance.
I went 2 for 4. I like that. It's my favorite balance because it means that I am somewhat familiar with guests, but they also introduce me to new things.
Right.
And, of course, the most important thing is that Mia Mingus was the inaugural user of the Rainbow Wand of Change.
You're limited to 2 sound effects a show now.
Oh,
you're cut off.
That stinks.
Quick, people, email in. Agree with me.
I love it.
He can have a couple, but then there, done.
That's a good news.
Then I take the button away.
So, over in friendly neighborhood Pakistan. You didn't read about this? You didn't hear about this?
I have not heard about this yet. I guess I didn't do my research.
The wealthy Clifton neighborhood of, I swear to you, it's called the Clifton neighborhood of Karachi, Pakistan, is hiring transgender women.
Oh, I did hear this story.
To shame tax evaders into paying. This is a quote from the Clifton board vice president. Quote, neighbors will come out and say, oh, what's happening? And the bad name the person will get, this will maybe convince them to pay taxes. And that's exactly what happens. End quote. Less than 1 million of 170 million Pakistanis voluntarily filed income tax returns last year, according to the New York Times. To address its tax evaders, the Clifton Cantonment Board hired a team of transgender women to go door-to-door to collect taxes. The theory is that the transgender tax collectors would embarrass the wealthy into paying their taxes. The Pakistani transgender women have already collected $100,000 in the 9 months they have been working, but the board is still $5 million short in its tax revenue. For many of the hired collectors, now this is the key, Becca, because this is what I want to talk about.
Okay.
For many of the hired collectors, this is their first salary job, as transgender individuals are regularly harassed by police and face, you know, more than a bit of stigma in Pakistan. They have now, this board has found a way to use this stigma to their benefit. So, on the one hand, we have this appalling nature of
of using people. I mean, really, using people to shame other people and just taking advantage of folks to an absurd degree.
Right. In such a way, yeah.
Is there another side to this? Maybe there's not another side to this.
There
I guess,
isn't really, no.
I guess they wanted to sway us in this little article by putting, for many of the hired collectors, this is their first salary job, as transgender individuals are regularly harassed by police. I don't know. That doesn't temper this at all, correct?
No.
Okay. So this is just appalling, and that's pretty much the end of it.
Bad.
Okay. All right.
Bad, Ken.
We would love to hear your opinions on that story. I kind of want to bring that story back. There's some other guests. We should have talked about that with Mia Mingus. But there's... I don't know. I think they were trying to present this
bad.
As a much more... nuanced story than it is. There we go. All right, folks. As always, we implore you, we exhort you to send us an email at thisshowissogay@AOL.com. We love your guest requests. We have some... We haven't updated the website yet. We will in the upcoming week. But we have some incredible guests that are saying, oh, yeah, I'm totally calling to your show. And I'm so excited of people that I'm just dream guests. And I'm very excited for them to wield the rainbow magic wand of change. Insert noise here. So that's very exciting. You should always go over to the Facebook and like, because that's a verb. You should like our This Show Is So Gay Facebook page. The group is still going. I'm hesitant to get rid of the group because there's more people in the group than the page. But as soon as one tops the other, then I'll get rid of the group. And what else? Subscribe to us on iTunes. It makes your listening
Please.
Experience a lot easier.
Write us letters.
Love letters.
Send us notes and tell us who we should bring on.
Love
again,
it.
Because you guys have done a really good job suggesting people.
I love that piece of this. We would never have known about some of these folks. So big, huge thanks to Mia Mingus. What an absolutely
especially
fantastic
Especially recommend
guest.
Them if it's like your friend, Mia.
Yes.
That would be even more helpful that. Because, you know... Maybe we wouldn't be able to get them on the show
exactly.
without
and
your help.
And then we can say, hey, we know your buddy Andrew. Will you be on the show?
Please.
Please. So that's pretty much it from us, folks. You should definitely make plans to go on July 31st.
That's right.
To P-Town, where Becca will be bartending and giving
leave
out...
Leave me a good tip.
Leave
And
Becca
I will donate
tip.
It to...
And I will give you a ton of This Show Is So Gay business cards, and you'll give them out to all these different people.
I will. I have a ton already.
Oh, good.
And I've got my This Show Is So Gay t-shirt.
Cut
so it's a long-sleeve t-shirt.
Oh, my God. Yes,
seriously. That might be a little brutal.
All right, we got one more song that we're going to play for you, but get out there, folks. Go do some incredible, incredible things. We love being with you a little bit earlier in the night. And that's it. Remember, above all else, why be gay, folks, when you can be so gay.
Monet and left foot. I'll keep on blaming the machine. And now I'm talking about it.